It is a KCIM Sports Rewind here on 1380 AM, 95.1 FM, a KCIM CB Sports Network Rewind here for you today on this Tuesday. And we have got a pretty cool guest in the studio, I think, with us today. Going to be talking, before we know it, Merchants Baseball will be here back in Carroll. Jim Allen, are you a chairperson, a co-chair, vice president?
Well, we generally call ourselves a gang. but I would say I'm a co-chairperson of the exec committee. It's John Perrin, me, Chris Whitaker, and Rod Berg, along with a bunch of other volunteers. But we can sort of guide the team, yes.
Jim, I know in talking with you and kind of dealing with you guys with the Merchants now for years, I don't know if anybody really understands the amount of time and effort that you guys put in each and every season during the off season, in a way, to get this stuff, ready to go. So kind of tell everybody, once this season ends, what's the process of getting ready for a next season for the Merchants?
Well, the first thing we do is we high-five each other and have a cold adult beverage and celebrate another season. But, we take some time off and don't talk about it. But about January, or in December, we'll start to have a few gatherings and talk about the plans and what we need to do. And since everybody's been doing this for so long, we kind of have our own little duties and stay in our lane. But we'll start to talk about coaches and players, because we renew coaches and players every season.
Yeah.
But, we've got to get housing lined up. We've got to get players lined up. That's the two key things that we have to do.
You mentioned the key thing with the housing. How is housing going for you guys right now? Do you got housing for everybody? You're still looking for housing. If somebody is interested in housing, how do they reach out to you?
Well, Tara Thompson, who does a great job, and she's been doing this, she lines up all the housing for us. As an email this morning, we're in excellent shape. But if someone wants to help out with that, with housing, they can reach out to me, Jim Allen. You can call Allen Distributing. You could reach out to John or Chris. But we're in good shape for housing right now.
Jim, what does housing a player entail? I'm sure for every family, it's a little different of how much they want to put into it. But what's kind of the ask of you guys for somebody that wants to house somebody?
Well, it's nice if, just you're opening your home to them. Mm-hmm. You lay out your rules. We have guidelines that we tell the players. Okay, this is the things we expect you to do and behave in. But it's your house. They're your guest. A lot of people treat them like a son. Mm-hmm. Often they feed them. We do a stipend at the end of the year that really doesn't cover the total cost. But basically, you've taken in someone to live with you, and you share a season with them. We have great experiences.
Mm-hmm. And I got to ask that with some of the parents and stuff, what has been the feedback from some of the former parents or still parents that have done housing in the past for you guys?
Well, some have built relationships, have traveled to their games as these players advance up in their baseball career. Mm-hmm. Some people have quasi-adopted them, in a sense, made them part of the family, gone to weddings, invite them home for holidays. So it's, you bring them in, you build an attachment, you go to their games. The kids are on the road a lot. They're practicing and they're going on the road and some road trips. We're going to fit 40 games into a short summer schedule. So, and some kids do get jobs, not too many, but some do. So you've brought in another son.
How big of a percentage do you feel it is of people that have housed for, several years, and how many of those families, in a way, have almost maybe housed somebody every year that you guys have done this?
I can't give you that exact number, but I do know that we've had families that have done it every year since we've been doing this. And we officially really ran this from 2017. Right. Okay, 2016 was an experiment. And then we did the Pioneer League with the teams from Bancroft and north of us, and then that league fell apart, and we joined up with the Mink. So we're going on, what, 8 seasons?
Yep.
And that's pretty good.
Talk about the community a minute, too, because I don't think that this would be anywhere possible without the support that you guys get from fans and everybody throughout the community with Merchants Baseball.
Well, we're self-funded. Mm-hmm. We don't get any money from the city of Carroll to run a baseball team. So if it weren't for game sponsors, program sponsors, booster club sponsors, You know, that's the revenue that we use to run this engine, and our budget is very high. So if it wasn't for that, the community support, there's no way this would work.
You talk a little bit about how unique you guys are with that, because we were talking before the show, you know, Clarinda's been owned by the same person, coached by the same person forever. You're one of the rare franchises, in a way, if that's what you want to call it, that isn't owned by somebody. It's kind of run by the town and the people like you that want to put in the time.
That's, you know, that's true. Not that you want to compare like Clarinda to the Lakers or anybody like that, but, you know, there are these, a lot of teams in this league have an owner mm-hmm. and a front office. And so they're doing this maybe as a job hobby, but for them, it's a revenue game and they do it year round. And we're just a group of volunteers. Besides the four of us, there's another group of people, Tom Hawkap, for mm-hmm. example, he takes care of lining up all the PA people, and Jim Gredeman and Tim Lawler, and Adam Webker line up the gate and the beer stand. And so everybody's got different tasks, and we just know what we do. But again, it's just all volunteers. And over time, we're going to probably need mm-hmm. people stepping up. But for right now, things are in good shape. We are about where we normally are for this time of year, getting ready for the season.
Talk about the team a little bit. We talked about housing and funding and all that stuff, but got a coach. It sounds like the roster is pretty much full. How many players are returning from last year's roster?
None.
And stuff like that? We have no returners. Wow.
None. And the roster is full with the exception of pitchers. Mm-hmm. And the thing you run into when you get a season started, some kids will play, but their coach at the college level is saying, you're only going to throw so many innings. Now, you know, if you're a catcher or a baseman, outfielder, you can bat and play all you want. But we do get occasionally some limitations on how much that kid can throw. And some kids come later because, you know, injuries possibly. So teams, you might have a list. These are your kids. But you're not going to know until several days before the game if everybody's going to show up.
Yeah.
How difficult does that make it? Probably not on you guys, but for the coaches when it comes to the decisions, probably on how you set up your rotation and those things. I know you're not a part of the staff, but that's got to be hard. And you guys feel that pressure because you know what they're dealing with.
Well, first thing is our committee, our group, we don't get involved in any coaching. None. If a parent calls up and says, Johnny's not getting enough playing time, you're talking to the wrong guys. We don't interfere with the coaches. But we want a good product on the field. And that's the difficult part. If we had a coach every season that didn't change, it might be easier to recruit. We do have some schools that like to send kids to Carroll because they like Carroll.
Right.
Fort Scott, for example. We always have players from there. And we are gaining a good reputation of a great field, as we all know, thank you to the late Scott Parcher. And we have a fabulous field, and thanks to the city, excuse me, and people that invested money for our remodels. And Carroll's a super town, and people like coming here. So that helps us in getting players.
And I know last season was kind of the first year of having those remodels. How do you feel like that maybe helped merchants for you guys, and how do you feel like that changed some of the stuff that maybe happened there?
Well, the field always looks great, and that's the amazing thing. When kids arrive from where they're playing college ball, they're like, wow, this is pretty cool. And the other thing that's really neat is most of these kids never play in front of this many fans. You know, we drew 10,000 people. We have over 500, 600 a game. They don't sit. There's no 500 kids watching Fort Scott,
right,
or fans. Mm-hmm. So that's one. The field is a big draw. The lights, we heard a lot of comments on the lights, being able to flash them and do different things. We're working on the PA system, and we're working, and this is John Perrin's gig. We want to improve our streaming because we get a lot of requests for that. So we want to do a better job with that.
Well, question for you. Local-wise, we've had so many local kids that have been successes in the area that have either, you know, you look back at coaches or have played for us. Do you know how many local kids we've got on the roster this year? Or?
I don't think we have. I looked at the roster this morning. From a local, we have a few Iowa Central. We've got a few DMAC. I don't think we have anybody that is like from a surrounding community. We've got some from Dort. So we have pretty good Iowa school presence.
Yeah.
But I don't know that we have anybody local.
You mentioned, Jim, the streaming aspect. I know it's been difficult with Honnold in control of that for years, but I got to take my shot at him.
Well, I know that you and I mentioned earlier, if Sister Juanita was there, she'd hit him on the hand with a ruler, I'm sure.
What are the changes and who's kind of all helping out getting what you guys are looking to do for streaming?
Well,
this year's setup?
We're working with Reesburg and John, and this is above my pay grade, but we want to improve our quality. We want to improve our sound and the visual. And though we don't get a large number streaming, we find that it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And improving our tech, we're going to do more with social media. Maureen Beck is going to head that. We're going to have a number of interns helping, so we're going to do a little bit more social media, do a better job with that. So, you know, the one thing that we try to do is do something a little better than the previous year. Yeah, okay, we're a bunch of volunteers, but we still want to be a premier team in the league. We want to be the part, look the part, look like a winner, be a winner. That's what we want to be about.
Speaking of the league, you were talking before we got on air that there has been a new addition to the league this year. It's still at seven teams, but there has been a new team added to the Meek.
Well, there's a team called the Nemo Natties, and they're from Kirksville area, and they've just been an independent, if that's what we'd call them, and they would play college ball anywhere they could. So if they play everybody in the league, they've played here several times. So they've officially joined the league. We lost Joplin to a Texas league, and now a new team is formed. Instead of the Outlaws, they're the Jailbirds. So, okay. That will be adding. So we'll be up to seven teams.
The schedule starts May the 25th, so right after Memorial Day. What still needs to be done, if anything, to get ready to go?
Good weather. Other than that, I think we're in good shape. We just got to make sure we get all the kids that we need. We've got housing. We've got everything ready to go.
When do players and coaches start arriving to Carroll? Do they arrive a couple weeks before the first game?
Several days.
Yeah.
Practice will be quick. You know, it's really fun. I think you might have witnessed this.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to watch these players who really don't know each other and how by mid-season, end of season, they've gelled into a team and they've become friends and they cheer for each other. It's kind of a fun process to watch this team building. And we've been very fortunate that we've had a good group of kids every year. We're pretty fortunate with that.
With 40 games, is it 20 home and 20 away? And then you got the state baseball tournament later on, that impacts your guys' schedule late July a little.
Well, if you look at our schedule, we have a long road trip. We have to accommodate that. That may be difficult if we would make the playoffs. I think we have 19 home, and we're going to play a non-conference game against the Monarchs of Kansas City. They'll come up. Fortunately, we haven't had too many rain dates. Right. We've been pretty good. You know, it's difficult because you have three teams using that field,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we all have to get along and share it. So that's.
And so when I used to broadcast, you know, I would talk to the other broadcasters that would come from other towns there, and they would always say, you know, great field, great environment, everyone was welcoming for this. How big is that reputation, not just for Carroll itself, but for the other places that come here to notice that, you know, this is a place that they are welcome to come and watch games and hang out and have a good time?
You know, it was a couple years ago. It was one of our early games, and there was a team, I want to say it's Sedalia, but I'm not sure that's right. And the owner of the team was here, and he saw all the fans wearing merchants' clothing. And he just was astounded. He goes, where do they get all this? And I go, well, we've got it figured out. We had people making it. We had it available. You could be booster club members. We were selling merchandise. That was one thing that kind of stuck out. You know, we're brand building as well, right? I see there's a Texas hoodie and a Nebraska cup and an Iowa State sticker and a flag. You know, we're all brand building, right? And that's what we're doing. Yep. And he was amazed that we had all these fans wearing all this merchandise. That was really cool. And we'll be doing it again. We'll have a store opening up on Top Loft again so people can buy new updated merchandise for the merchants.
Before we get wrapped up, anything else that we're missing to hit on with the merchants coming up, anything like that, that important dates that people might need to know?
No, but I do want to thank the station. You guys have done a great job for us, mentioning us, talking about us. It's been a great thing for Carroll. I think we mentioned it. We draw about 10,000 fans total. That's a big draw. Mm-hmm. And we always hear positive comments. I can't thank the community enough because you hear it all the time. Hey, great. Thanks for doing this. It's fun to come down. It's a great environment, right? $5 to get in, $5 for a adult beverage.
Right.
Easy entertainment. Yeah, it's pretty cool. It works out pretty well.
Yeah, well, Jim, we want to thank you for coming in and joining us this morning and hope everything runs well for the merchants this summer.
You and me both. We hope that it goes well as also. Thank you very much.
And that was Jim Allen with the Carroll Merchants. We'll step away, take a break. We'll be back with more KCIM Sports Rewind here in just moments.
For a limited time, turn up the flavor at A&W Jefferson with their new jalapeno queso bacon double burger combo. Two juicy all-beef patties stacked high and topped with warm, spicy queso, smoky bacon, and crisp jalapenos for a bold kick of heat. It's melty, savory, and packed with flavor in every bite. Served with golden fries and a made fresh root beer in their signature frosty mug. It's an all-American meal with a little Southwestern attitude and then some. Hurry into A&W Jefferson and try the jalapeno queso bacon double burger combo today.
Hi, this is Christy Pettibum, Certified Occupational Therapy Assistant with St. Anthony Rehab Services. At St. Anthony Rehab Services, we offer occupational therapy services for people of all ages. Occupational therapy is the evaluation of each individual's ability to participate in everyday activities, including things like grooming, cooking, bathing, feeding, dressing, medication management, and much more. We put together individualized treatments to regain strength, endurance, memory, problem solving, safety awareness, and many other areas of concern. We can even help modify the environment or implement suggestions for adaptive equipment in order to enhance their independence. The St. Anthony Rehab Services Department is dedicated to offering you or your loved ones the best in rehab services. To learn more about occupational therapy, please contact the St. Anthony Rehab Services. The results you want, the care you deserve.
Don't let your attention drift while driving during planting season. Lens Insurance and Grinnell Mutual want your help by keeping farmers safe. They're busy and back on the roadways, so help us protect their well-being. Remember to use caution and share the road so we can all trust in tomorrow. Contact Lens Insurance, your local Grinnell Mutual agent, at 792-1700 today for all your insurance needs.
Trust in tomorrow is a registered trademark of Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company.
The more you listen to your kids, the closer you'll be. So we asked kids, what do you want your parents to hear?
I feel sometimes that I'm not listened to. I would just want you to listen to me more often and evaluate situations with me and lead me towards success.
Listening is a form of love. Find resources to help you support your kids and their emotional well-being at soundedouttogether.org. That's soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Pivotal.
We are back with the CP Sports Network Rewind Show here on 13 AM, 95.1 FM, KCIM. Just got Doc Tuckin with Jim Allen of the Carroll Merchants, and it sounds like everything's going good for them. They still do need some sponsorship, and we forgot to ask Jim about that.
Yep.
But if anybody that is out there, a business that does want to sponsor, reach out for them.
I think you said they have a couple of games that they're kind of waiting to hear back. I think they've got some asks, but they're still open. So if you're a business and you'd love to be a part of what the merchants do and sponsor a game, Chris Whitaker would probably be the guy to reach out to. But I'm sure if you reached out to John Perrin or to Chris Whitaker, G-Man, they would, you know, or Jim Owen, they would, any of those guys would probably help you out. But yeah, just an amazing thing that they've been able to do. As just, you know, as Jim said, it's a community baseball team. This, you know, people think of the Merchants and they think of those guys maybe owning it, but they don't. But they put in an awful lot of work. Yeah. And I think they have a pretty good committee. I know I ripped on Honnold a little bit earlier just because I know at some point later today I'll get a text, you know, and stuff that he heard it. And it's kind of fun to do. But, you know, him and Hawkap and everybody else, I know the first few years when things kind of start getting rolling, I sat in on some of the meetings to kind of try and get some of the, you know, the coverage that we were going to do at that point established with them. And I know how many people kind of have their fingers in helping getting things going, but they put in an awful lot of time.
And something I wanted to say with that is that, you know, you guys gave me the opportunity then to broadcast and kind of get experience and stuff like that. So if you are kind of in that high school or early college years age and you want to get some experience, whether that's social media, business aspect of maybe helping them run it, just reach out to them. They're more than glad to probably take as many people as they can get to maybe teach them and then help them run what they do.
Yeah, and I feel bad. I will say this, that, you know, we did cover them. You know, we had a few years there where we were doing all the home games on the social media, and we would do some on radio in previous years. We've just gotten so busy with so much stuff going on here. And, you know, I know there's three of us sitting in here right now talking high school sports and the Merchants. But, you know, we're covering extra high school stuff than what we did when the Merchants got started. We just simply, we don't have time as much as we'd love to get out and do some of the games. You know, I know I had this conversation with Kim, you know, a while back, and we talked about it. It's like a lot of times our only coverage day was Sunday. And when you're already doing, you know, long days, you know, Monday through Saturday, you need that a day to kind of recover. And Mason can tell you, when you go out and do a doubleheader, you heard Jim kind of talk about it, sometimes they just give a high five. Those are long days. Yeah. You know, you get there an hour and a half before the first game, you sit through and broadcast two games, you do post-game interviews, you tear down, you're looking at a 8-9 hour day on a Sunday, and that's hard for me to ask you guys or even myself to do when you're already working the amount of time that we're doing just to cover the high school stuff in our area. So, and not complaining about how much we have to do. We love doing what we do. It's just hard to slide something else into that schedule with as much as what we're already doing.
And
so
I didn't realize that some of the teams were owned by people. I thought it was just, I thought everybody was just volunteer, you know, here's what it is. And that makes it even more impressive of what they do and the product that they put out on the field every year, that these are guys that are taking time from their everyday jobs to do what they do.
It's a passion for them, and you can tell, you know, none of the guys are older gentlemen. I'm not trying to say that, but you just wonder who's going to step in for them when these guys, because, you know, it's difficult, you know, to find the time to be able to do that year in, year out for you know, a really extended a period of time. So one of the things I'd love to talk to Jim and Chris and those guys about someday is who's the next generation that's going to step in, you know, when they decide that they just don't have the time anymore to be able to give. Who's going to be that next generation that steps in and keeps things rolling and as smoothly as what these guys have done? You don't ever run into issues with Merchants baseball here in the community. Yeah. So,
local sports-wise, it was kind of busy for you guys last week, and especially last night, Mason. We had a couple of good soccer matches for the Carroll and Kemper boys. Kemper swept them, but it sounds like both teams played pretty good for Carroll.
Yeah, and for the Carroll girls, just unfortunately, you run into what is probably a powerhouse in our area for soccer in the Kemper girls. They've been playing pretty well, and they've kind of hit that stride. You know, they had a couple of bumps and bruises with some injuries there, but they've kind of found their stride. And what a game as well, in the sense of Riley Massey scores two goals, Sierra Pudent scores two goals. But after that, nobody else repeated goals. They had like eight different girls, maybe six different girls that scored in that game. And it was very impressive to watch the way that they just work as a team, and the way that, you know, it's not, you know, obviously Sierra being the number one girl in their history with goals. She's not going to go in there and say, I want 5 goals today because I know we could possibly 10-0 them. She's going to get her 1, her 2 possibly there, and I think she's more than happy getting 0. But they just played phenomenal ball. And for the Carroll girls, they played really well to start the game there, kind of controlling the midfield. But, you know, once that first goal went in there, I felt like, you know, Kemper gained that confidence and they just set themselves apart.
Yeah, and you talk about Kemper. I got a chance to watch them last Friday against Storm Lake, first chance I'd had to see them this year. And, you know, going into the year, everybody knew who Sierra Pudens was. You heard the rumors about, you know, Riley Massey and that she plays a lot. And her dad, of course, is the coach. She grew up around the game. But they've got a lot of girls on that team. You got Kaylin Pudens. You got Kaylee Hausman. You got Yetmar. You got Cassie Lorman, who handles the ball as well as a freshman. You got Addie Entover in the back. This has really become a full team, and it's not just a Sierra Pudens, you know, having to try and carry the team. And I think she's done an amazing job of realizing, you know, like Mason said here a moment ago, she doesn't have to go out and score 5 goals. They've had some teams in the past that, you know, had a great player mm-hmm. that kind of had to carry. There's no having to carry. This is a really team effort, and it's probably one of the deeper teams, you know, that I've seen. And I know I missed some kids and just kind of rambling off some of the names off the top of my head. But, you know, this is a deep team, and I think they're going to be a hard out because they share the ball extremely well.
Sharing the ball. They've got so many girls on offense, too, that you have to worry about. Just like you mentioned Sierra, she's going to draw all the attention, but it opens up everything else for all these other girls to do what they do best. And I think that's what's going to make Kemper really, really, as you mentioned, a tough team.
And I know you were doing homework. Riley's one of the leading assist ladies in the state, right?
She's top 5 in assists. And I mean, for a girl that, you know, moved from the defensive end of the ball to the offensive end of the ball, I said, I mean, there's no, you couldn't tell, because she just goes out there and plays hard and plays physical. But, you know, last night Coach Massey said some of the bigger pieces, Lily Casper Bauer in the middle last night, controlled the middle for them. And the biggest thing is that, you know, when Carroll would go on the attack, Kemper's defense held in that line and was able to turn the ball back over and get it over onto the offensive end. Addie Entover, I seriously think, touched the ball once and had 0 saves that game because Kemper's defense just kept the ball away from the goal.
And that's the second game in a row, at least, that they've done that, because I remember Mason mentioning to me before I went to the Storm Lake game last Friday that, you know, their defense is really good. And I'm like, I didn't really get to see the defense because the ball really never got past midfield. And I know the defensive girls are a part of that when they come up, you know, towards midfield. But the ball's on their offensive end so much. I remember talking to Sierra Pudens and Riley Massey after the game, and I said, you put so much pressure on a defense, you know eventually it's going to crack. And it kind of sounded like in the second half that's what started to happen to Carroll. It was a 3-0 game at halftime, so the Tigers really were right into that one. But as you just mentioned, when Carroll didn't have the ball down on their offensive end, your defense can only take so much before it starts to break down a little bit and before the pressure gets to them. And it sounds a little bit like that's what happened because of what Kemper does so well.
And the biggest thing Coach Massey said is that they started the game trying to force the ball to the middle, trying to get it to Sierra and Riley in the middle. And he said at halftime, girls, you know, they're going to try and guard that middle because that's kind of the valuable point. So what they changed is that they said, you know, get the ball to Cassie or McKenzie on the outside, let them cross it in, and then go get it. And then right away, 38, 37, 30 mark, they score 3 in a row to make it 6-0 there. And it just looked like a completely different attack. They were attacking from the right, the left, the center, wherever they needed to be. They were getting the ball in there and were able to fundamentally break down that defense.
The boys' game, we really felt like it was going to be a good one. I don't know if I anticipated a 1-0. When you looked at records, Carroll High was probably the favorite going in. What did Kemper do so well last night to kind of hold a team that averages about 15, 16 shots on goal a game, held them scoreless on the night?
So they started the game out, and you kind of noticed this right away, and Jackson and I said it. They come out of the gates right away, and they're sprinting on the offensive end, passing the ball through the offensive end, and they came out and kind of put Carroll on their backside right away and said, we're going to come out and we're going to manhandle you. And then Tim Myers goes, and his unmarked back-to-back possession is the first one he converts on the goal and scores at the 38-minute mark, and then the second time unable to get it. But, you know, we watched this happen, and I'm like, this is the first time I've seen out of Raccoon River play that Carroll looked like they weren't ready right away, and then they started to combat that. But by that time, Kemper had the confidence in their defense and in their midfield to be able to control it. And at that point, I told Jackson, you're up 1-0. They don't really have to be as aggressive as they did to start the game, but Kemper still was, which allowed them to keep the ball on their offensive end. But, you know, I give props to a couple of the guys out there, Tim Myers, Fletch Baiting, Charlie Mayhall, Brennan Benami, kind of controlling that middle and being able to reverse the ball back instead of allowing Carroll to go get a ton of touches in the offensive end of their field.
I didn't get a chance to watch it, but do you think because Kemper's dominated that rivalry so much in the past that maybe Kemper had a little bit more juice coming into last night's game?
I think the biggest thing as you look at it here is Carroll was expected to be good this season, and then Kemper came out, you know, started the season off 0-3, and then they got to 2-3. And Ken Massey said this again in the postgame. The boys have the short-term goals that they set every game. They look only one game ahead, and they say, let's go get our first win. Let's go get another one. Let's go make it 500 now. And they came out there, and literally they didn't even, when I talked to them, didn't talk about, you know, how much it meant to play Carroll. They just said, it's another game. Let's go get to 500, and let's get this thing rolling once again. So I think that they did a nice job of not making the game bigger than what it was supposed to be sometimes.
How big has it been, the change of putting Charlie Mayhall down on the offensive end? Because they seem like they've been a little different since then.
It's been huge. I mean, when you look at what their offense brings, Drew Gasell, Fletch Baiting, Tim Myers, they're all guys. Obviously, Drew can facilitate through and get the ball through, but Fletch and Tim aren't super physically imposing guys. They're more of those speed guys that can control the ball. Charlie gives you that option of what I felt like Riley gave you on the girls' end, is that you have a guy that's going to go win 50-50 balls by using his body, and he's going to, you know, make defenders worry about, am I going to be running into a guy that's going to run me over because he's going to want to get this ball. So I think that that was the biggest thing, because Kemper's defense was solid with Creighton Halber, Brennan Benami, and Nick Wernemont in the back, no matter what, if you're going to put Charlie Mayhall back there. But to put him in the front, I think, was more valuable for the offense than it was for the defense.
For Carroll, you were sitting 5-2-1, best start maybe in program history. There were some expectations. I don't want to phrase it, you know, that, oh boy, what's wrong, but what do they do from here, and how in a way do they recover? Because they're still a really good team, but this one's going to sting a little bit because they got to feel like this was that opportunity to get a big win against a program that's given them some trouble in the past. So how do they rebound from this?
Just kind of trust that, you know, we are a good team. We're a good program. That's kind of the things that you say to each other there. And then you look at it and you say, we lost. Don't dwell on it. Don't look back and say, we could have done this, we could have done this. You got another game today in Boone. You look ahead at the schedule and you just say, you know, it's moving on to the next game. But quick side note there, I kind of talked to Ethan Oshlin, who's done some games with us here, and had him come up to the booth for a minute to give his thoughts on what he's seen, because he's watched a lot of the Carroll games. And he made a point that kind of resonated with me with Jared Moore. He goes, Jared Moore is the most polished non-soccer player to ever play the game of soccer at the high school level he's seen.
Right.
And you saw that the last night there, Jared coming out of the goal, getting the balls that, you know, other goalies wouldn't go get because they're worried about not protecting the goal. You know, he dove on the ground, and if you saw Jeff Storyhan's shot from last night, dove on the ground, took a boot from Charlie Mayhall to the stomach. Mayhall goes over him, but he still holds on to that ball and gets up and is ready to go. But, you know, for Carroll, for me, the biggest thing is sharing the ball, playing like a team. Because I said on the thing, they talk so much about, you know, we're a family, this is a family sport, share the ball there. Last night, it kind of felt like when times got tough, they weren't able to share the ball as effectively and run as a group. So to get back to that like they did in the early part of the season is going to be huge for them.
So a tough question for you here. This is a team mentioned. They average about 15 to 16 shots on goal, but they don't always have those big nights. Who needs to become those consistent goal scorers for them so that if they're getting all of those shots, they start scoring more than, you know, a couple of goals a night?
Yeah, you see Luis has had a couple of big nights, and, you know, there's been nights where they score four and he's got three of them. But I think the biggest thing has been when they're the most successful is when Sawyer's kind of running the show for them up top, because he's one of those guys that just very skilled. I wouldn't say vanilla, but he just kind of gives you what he gives you. He's not going to go out there and show off his skills. He's going to go score, and then walk back or jog back and get ready to play defense. But him and Landon have to kind of be those two, because I think Luis is going to get his goals and get his assists. But I think when Carroll's the best is when Landon's up there scoring, when Sawyer's up there scoring. So you need those three guys to be able to kind of rotate between.
So since the last time we had the show last Tuesday, you also saw East Sac County last week against Kemper. I know the ESAC boys didn't play last night. Girls got beat by a pretty good Panorama program. Carla Blasi is really good up there. What did you see from ESAC County as we stay with soccer?
They are, for the girls, one of the most physical midfields I've seen between Sarah Bontrager, Jordan Carroll. I mean, they're physical in the midfield, but I was impressed with Danae Thayer in the goal box. She's one of those goalies that, you know, isn't afraid to dive and hit the ground hard and, you know, keep the ball away from the goal. But obviously we talk about Carla, they're phenomenal athlete, phenomenal goal scorer. Even, you know, Coach Massey coming up after the ESAC game said she's about what you asked for in a high school soccer girl. But they've just got some work to do, obviously. You know, they've got some injury bugs going on. Chloe Barrett not playing this season for them. Carla Blasi a little banged up in there as well. But they've just got to find their stride, have everyone healthy and ready to go. And I think Coach Bob Babe is just hoping that that time when they find their stride is later in the season, they don't hit their peak early in the year.
How about the boys?
Just a couple of struggles. I mean, you've got some guys that are some good pieces, but they've also lost some of their guys to track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have Riley Aragon, who's their leading goal scorer, who runs in track, and he's kind of prioritized that with him going to college and running. So you've got the pieces to do it. They just haven't really found that second gear, in my opinion, because when you watched them against Kemper, they were right in it for a little bit, but then Kemper found that second gear and was able to go score a couple of goals. I didn't think that ESAC had that second gear in them that night, and we'll see on Thursday when they play against Carroll. They just got to find, you know, when you get to that second half, when you get to that 20-minute mark in the second half, that second gear of we're tired, but we still need to do the things correctly to be able to pull out a win.
Drake Relays was over the weekend, too,
yep,
and everything like that. We had quite a few kids going down and participating with some good showings. I know Jeff was saying on top of all that stuff that we had going on at Drake, three 4x1 teams, a couple high jumpers,
yep,
Tristan and the discus. Am I missing anybody else that was down there?
No. So you had Luol and Trayvon in the high jump. You had Tristan in the discus, and then you had the three relay teams. And I was just getting ready to pull up, 'cause I can't remember off the top of my head exactly where everybody finished on Saturday, so I'll pull those up here real quick, because the 4x100 teams ran on Saturday morning. The IK Manning girls, I know Coach Peterson down there told me that they ran a really clean race, just short of their PR, which they had set to get into that down at ACGC, but they finished up 85th in a time of 51.71 with Anna Stangle, Olivia Lindy, Araya Miners, and Kayla Rasmussen. The Carroll boys ran a good, strong race. They had a busy day. They had to get back and get ready for prom on Saturday night. So I'm sure they're probably glad that, the prelims were early in the day and that gave them time to be able to get back. You know guys like Mason, it takes him a couple hours to get his hair ready in the day. So, you know. So, right?
I woke up, took a shower, and walked in here. That's about all you get.
All right, we'll talk about that here in just a second. But Carroll boys with Trayvon Childress, Camden King, Landon Merlin, Luol Thargiath finished in 77th, running a 44.15, and Ikea Manning took 86th in that same event with a time of 45.04. Davis Rasmussen, Zach Solberg, Brennan Morris, and Ashton Arnholtz were the group that made that up. You look at Trayvon and Luol. I know a lot of people were like, well, Trayvon just got 6.9. How did he go out on 6.6? Well, high jump's not, it's one of those things where you have that night where everything's right and everything's perfect and you clear a lot. And then maybe the next day it's not quite as perfect, and still had a really good day. Got 6.2 and 6.4 on his first attempt, went out on 6.6 to finish up in seventh place. I think the young man that won it, and I forget where he was from, got 7 foot.
Walkie.
Yep. So that's really impressive. And then Luol ended up going out, if I remember right, on 6-2. So he got the opening height. So congrats to him. He finished up in 14th place.
And the good part about that, and you look at it, there was no other 1A kids above Trayvon.
Right.
There was no other 1A kids sniffing where Trayvon was at.
Yep.
And, you know, from last year we talked about this, and you wrote the story about it, so you can maybe attest to it. When they went down to Cam, Trayvon jumped against Landon Bloom, who was the kid that pushed him last year.
Yep.
Landon about 6 foot, 6 foot two range. Trayvon 6 foot nine range. So if you're Trayvon, you're probably happy. And for Louis, there was a couple of 3A kids there, but they were around where Louis was at. So I mean, if he can keep his footing and keep going and making those improvements, you got to be sitting pretty good. And for Tristan, I know, probably not happy with where she was at in 20th, but she comes back to a meet that same day.
Throws over 130.
Throws at 130, and I'm like, well, you got to think for her, you know, where was that then? But at the same time, you get down there, and it's a whole different environment, different way of throwing. And it didn't help that, you know, that day a little gloomy, a little wet over there, and it was a little wet over here as well. So for them, you know there are going to be kids that could possibly, and if not, almost locks to get back to Drake in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and for Tristan, I know in covering state for a lot of years, and even, you know, our throwers that have gotten down to Drake before, you throw a scratch on the first two or a fault, that last throw, you just want something. You don't go for a big throw most of the time. You're just trying to get a distance. So I think she threw 115.9 or something like that on her last throw. That she went over and threw 130 later that night when she got back to town. That's more typical of her, but you're not trying to get that 130 throw on that last throw. You just want something so that you can place as high as you possibly can. So I think that's was part of her getting the 115, so she'll bounce back. I do want to, you know, I got to ask, you've got a little event going on after the show here this morning. You're going to do this, and they're going to throw it out somewhere on social media. So I got to ask, where's it going to be so that the people that are tuning in can find
I'm
you
just,
with what you were somehow willing to do, I guess.
I'm an unnamed participant, and I don't know where this is going. But to explain it in the short way, I'm going to be blindfolded, and they're going to – I don't know what is going to be thrown at me, but something, and it's going to be Renee and Tiffany, so I don't – God knows what they're going to throw at me, but they're going to throw things at me, and I have to try and guess it. They said food and liquid, but I wouldn't be surprised if I get something hard thrown at me. I don't know.
If it cracks, it might be an egg.
Well, obviously. But the other bad thing is that I walk in yesterday, and they go, are you allergic to anything? So I think that they're trying to plot things together, but I'm going to stand, I think, out in the grass in the back and be blindfolded, and they're going to throw stuff at me.
And then you have to try and taste it, right? So they're going to try and have to hit you in the head.
I don't want it in my mouth, so right. I'm going to just try and feel it.
Okay.
Because I don't want them to throw something disgusting and it land in my mouth.
Okay. So I'm like, well, isn't that the whole thing, though?
No, it's feel, I think.
Oh, it is? No, because the one that they showed me, the video they showed me, is the person had to taste it, and based off of taste. Did they not explain that to you?
They just said blindfold, they're going to throw
stuff
at me.
Yeah, no, they're
going to
throw it at your face, and then you got to taste it and tell them what it is. And I know there's like 3 dozen eggs in the refrigerator right now, so I have a figure.
They might just throw eggs at me until I get bored. I wouldn't be surprised if they threw eggs, and one of them's just coated in concrete or something. They just chuck it at me. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe you can repost it on our sports network or something.
If I'm you, I try and chuck something back at them.
Maybe I'll go grab one of those eggs and hide it behind my back. And see, but the only bad thing is then they can't go home and shower.
Well, you might be better off throwing blindfolded than with your vision. So, you might actually throw better that way.
I've got a cannon for an arm here. I'll try out for the merchant.
It's the accuracy that we're concerned about. So that's why I'm thinking the blindfolded. I mean, you throw a little like Honnold, so, you know.
I've never seen Honnold throw, so.
We will step away. We'll take one more break. Back talking some more local sports here on KCIM Sports Rewind.
As the athletes at your house prepare for hard work and fun of the season, remember that St. Anthony Rehab Services provides physical therapy for any sports injury that may sideline your member of the team. Sports injuries can plague kids of all ages and keep them from playing the sport they love. Athletes will be under the direct supervision of a certified and licensed healthcare professional in the newly renovated sports performance facility. If an injury is keeping your athlete out of the game, call St. Anthony Rehabilitation Services at 794-5000 for sports injury and treatment rehab.
At National Geographic Society, We believe in the power of wonder. It drives us to explore, pushes us to see the world differently, moves us to action. And we believe that today, wonder is more essential than ever.
Wow.
That's why we're supporting a new generation of explorers to ask big questions, make breakthroughs, and bring the future closer. Wonder awaits. Will you join us? Visit natgeo.org/wonder.
You are listening to the CB Sports Network Rewind Show here on 13 AM, 95.1 FM, and KCIM. All of it helping us be brought to us today by St. Anthony Regional Hospital, St. Anthony Rehab Services.
Yes.
Specifically there at St. Anthony. Mason mentioned it earlier. We're a couple weeks away from the state meet.
Yeah.
Happening 3 weeks away from the state meet. We've got state qualifying sites out. And luckily for us all, we got a lot of schools at one site.
Yeah, got really lucky. I love the guys over there in Boone, especially when they make things really easy for us and stuff. And they do a great job. I would hate to have to try and figure out all the things that they have to figure out to get teams assigned where they're going. But every 1A school that we cover, and I'll try to run through alphabetically here, so bear with me a little bit, are Weva, Audubon, Coon Rapids, Bayard, Exiro, Corden, Kimbleton, Glidden, Ralston, ICAM, Manning, Peyton, Sherdan, all going to be participating down in Audubon. Mm-hmm. So that will be nice. I didn't forget anybody, right?
I don't think so.
I ran through there.
Because how many did you name?
I think I named seven.
So if we have 11 schools, the four that...
Yeah, so he should be pretty good. The one disappointment was our 2As. There's three of us that are going to go out and probably cover these state qualifying meets. They gave us four sites. They split up our 2As. ESAC and South Central Calhoun will go up to Sioux Central, just north of Storm Lake there, and compete, while Kemper travels south down to Trainer and stuff. And I know last year, I think we got lucky that all three of those schools were all over at Ogden, and that's where Mason went. And then Carolyn 3A is going to be heading down to Glenwood. So with three of us, we'll get three of those qualifying sites. And our coverage at state qualifying meets is a little different than what we do at track meets during the regular season. Usually we go stand down around the finish line, kind of mill around, do interviews and video interviews with the kids after the stuff. And state qualifying night, we literally are up in the press box. We're tweeting out results for every single one of the local athletes right after the event happens, so that you know right away on our Twitter account who has qualified. And then we're literally putting together our recap for the website and stuff, and posting that. So you'll actually be updating the website with those results as well, as the night is going on. So it's different. We don't do any video interviews because everybody that qualifies is going to be interviewed no matter how they finish down at the state meet, the very next week. So it'll be a little different coverage. Hopefully, I think people are kind of used to it. We've been doing coverage this way now for several years, but I feel like it's the best way to try to get that information out on those nights. So I thank both of you guys for being willing to head on out and cover a meet somewhere that night. So
I don't really have a choice. It's kind of your decision. So, it's probably more of thanking KC for being there. But, it does, kind of piggybacking off that, it does help when I talked to Coach Darren Shirky last week. You talked to him this week. And I said, how different is it to finally go back to Audubon? And he goes, there has been years where they'll put us at ACGC and Audubon's hosting a meet. And he goes, why are we driving by Audubon to go to ACGC to run a meet? So he's like, with them being back in 1A and them taking everyone from the local area and just shoving them there, he goes, it's easy because all the coaches, all the people.
Yep.
You're going to get fans down there because everyone's not that far away. So he's like, it just makes it easier. But it just sucks that, Kemper wasn't with those two, or we just have everyone covered in one night.
Right. And the interesting thing is, for all of our local schools, minus maybe Glidden-Ralston, I think everybody from our area competes at one or two meets down in Audubon pretty much every single year. So, and Audubon does, Sean and Sean Burks and, Randy Spies and everybody else that helps down there, Christy Nielsen, they do an absolutely wonderful job of running track meets. They are some of the elite track meets that you go to as far as the way they're run. And I'm so glad when they get a host, not just because all of our area schools most of the time get to go there, but I've had it before where Peyton Chernan's gotten sent north. So it's nice to see. But even Peyton Chernan competes down there during the regular season. So, you know, I talked to Kevin Brown, the Exirocron-Kimbledon track coach, last week, and that was one of the things he brought up. It's almost like a home track meet for them because it's right up the road. But you look at IKM Manning, you look at Arweva, they compete down there two or three times a year in meets. It's not a home meet, but they're very comfortable with everything and how everything works and everything else.
And so, we talk about that tonight. I think almost all of those teams, if not all of them, are down there tonight for a track meet. I mean, you look at it, I think IKM Manning, Peyton Chernan, Audubon, Exira, all going to be running down at Audubon tonight. So you kind of get that later in the season feel with this right now, and you're going to look at it and say, this is a track meet you focus on because this is the track you're running on, some of the schools you're running against.
Yep.
So you kind of treat it more of, this is a trial run.
How do you think, with all those teams being down there in Audubon, that helps with chances to get to state? Does it hurt, or does it kind of benefit potential kids getting down there?
I think it helps in this. In Class 1A, they only take the champion, and then after the districts, I think there's 12, if I remember correctly, 12 districts, so they'll take the next 12 kids after all the results are turned in. Well, when you got 7 of maybe the 11 or 12 teams that are there, you've got a pretty good bet of maybe finishing with a first place kid in a lot of the events. I don't want to say everyone, of course, but when it gives you an opportunity to have a lot more kids maybe potentially finish in first, and then with that competition, maybe you can squeeze some more kids in with that second or third place finish when they qualify on their time or the throw that they had the next day.
And I gotta talk about, if one of us is going down to Audubon, that 100-meter dash between Max Butler, Caden Oswald, Blaise Schilling, Trayvon Keeley, I mean,
Wyatt Regaler,
Cal Hayden possibly in there as well. I don't know, out of those kids, that's going to be a legendary race between those kids.
Sean, if you're listening, if you can work it and get all 8 kids in one heat, that would be absolutely amazing.
And I think that would be the possibility. And you look at it then, you could get 4 or 5 of those guys. I think all of those names you mentioned are state-quality sprinters. You could legitimately maybe get 4 or 5 guys, because they'll all push each other to run their best. You could legitimately get 4 or 5. I don't want to say 6, because that might be pushing, you know, 6 of the 24 that would qualify, or 6 of the 12 or 5. I guess it would be 5 of the 12 non-automatic qualifiers. But, you know, you could get 3, 4, 5 guys out of just that one race from the local area, which would be really, really cool.
Yeah. Anything we're missing before we wrap up today?
Boys tennis tonight, Audubon and Kemper going to be down there. Jeff and I, we're going to do some video interviews with that. We'll also be at the track meet, so kind of both of those being right next door to each other will be pretty good. But, you know, boys tennis again, we're going to write recaps about it, but, you know, just struggling for numbers this season. Audubon finally got all of their guys back, and right when that happens, Kemper lost a couple of guys. So we're going to see that duel tonight, and we'll do some interviews with both teams and both programs.
And I want to give a shout out, a thank you, and a beg at the same time for Mike Power at Kemper and Sean down there at Audubon. It is great when you have the track meet and both your tennis teams playing right across the street from each other, so you can literally be at the track meet for a while, go over, cover tennis, and then from tennis go back over to the track meet. So if they could work it into the schedule to play down in Audubon, you know, every year on a night that Audubon's got a track meet, that would be heaven for us media people.
The only other one is if they would do it at Carroll, while Carroll and Kemper host a track meet.
Yes,
as well.
And then have Audubon up here as well. Yeah,
do it the same week they run all those schools that the track meet, just play Kemper Audubon early in the season.
Yeah, so we should just get Carroll to have a track meet that's all 11 of our schools.
I don't think we got that.
Row.
That has been KCIM Sports Rewind for this Tuesday. Check out a podcast of it.